Hello, everybody. My name is Andy Fernandez.
And my name is Michael Fernandez.
And welcome back to another episode of What Makes It Great. Today, we are talking about A Place in the Sun from 1951, directed by George Stevens, ranked number 92 on the original list and not ranked on the updated list.
Which, I don't want to spoil anything, but I am bummed that it fell off.
I am too. I was really into this movie.
Same, but we'll talk more about that later. Give me the rest of the deets.
Yeah, so I had never heard of this movie before.
Same.
I had never seen this movie before. Same. I watched it earlier today, and
oh, nice.
I am ready to talk about it.
Well, same day. Okay, I watched it this weekend. It's free on Amazon.
Yeah, Prime, if you have a Prime account.
Yeah, if you have an Amazon Prime account, it's free on there. And yeah, I watched it, I think, 2 days ago. And yeah, really, really enjoyed it. Never seen, never heard, never seen an Elizabeth Taylor movie before.
Me neither.
Just went into this one completely blind.
Yeah. And I actually watched the trailer of it a couple of days before that was on Amazon Prime. And I was like, oh boy, this is going to be rough. I think it's just that trailers were bad in early Hollywood.
Now the trailers tell you the whole movie, but back then.
Yeah, it was just like passion, romance, kind of stupid stuff. It was dumb, but the movie I thought was much, much better.
Yeah.
Okay, well, so there are two people I want to talk about briefly before we go into the movie, and one concept to talk about very briefly. Elizabeth Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
She's a big, big name, and this is our first movie with her. I think we only have one other movie with her on the list, and it's not for until the 60s, the late 60s.
Which one is that?
Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
Ah, gotcha.
So this one, I put on my notes, one of the most famous actresses ever. She was born in London to American parents and began starring in movies in the 1940s. She is a Dame Elizabeth Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
She was in movies in the 40s and the late 30s, but then she really got a lot of acclaim for A Place in the Sun in 1951 and many other films. She stars in Cleopatra, which is one of the most notorious movies ever for how expensive it was, and that she began an affair with her co-star Richard Burton during that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, she gets nominated 5 times for Academy Awards for Best Leading Actress. Rain Tree Country, 1958, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof in 1959, and Suddenly Last Summer in 1960, 3 years in a row. The fourth year in a row, she wins for Butterfield 8 in 1961, and then she wins again in 1967 for Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
And my God, she is beautiful.
She is beautiful. She is probably, for my money, the most attractive actress I think we've found on the list so far.
I think so, too. Sorry, Ginger Rogers.
This movie, by the way, has a connection with that one because it's the same director as Swing Time.
Is it really?
George Stevens directed Swing Time and A Place in the Sun.
That's why I know that name.
Yeah. Also, Elizabeth Taylor wins a Jean Hersholt Humanitarian Award from the Academy in 1993 for her charitable contributions. She did a lot of charity work and a lot of humanitarian work throughout her career.
Hmm.
Her private life is just as famous as her acting. She was married 8 times to 7 different men. She married Richard Burton twice. She married him and divorced him twice.
That's awesome.
And she had a lot of health problems throughout her life, including there was just like a big section on her Wikipedia page of all her health stuff. And so I just like made a little bit of a list. It was like scoliosis, pneumonia, addictions to alcohol, painkillers and tranquilizers.
Damn.
Heavy smoker. She had a brain tumor. She had skin cancer. And eventually she dies in 2011.
Car accident.
Not that long ago. At the age of, yeah, right. But not at the age of 79 from congestive heart failure.
Wow.
Yeah. And she is, the American Film Institute ranks her as the number 7 greatest actress of the classic age of Hollywood.
Yeah, she's a pretty, pretty cool lady.
Yeah. and just like always in the tabloids. I think her and Richard Burton were kind of like the original Brangelina. The other one I want to talk about is Montgomery Clift.
Mm-hmm.
He is the main actor in this movie, and he is notable for being one of the first actors in Hollywood who focuses on method acting.
Hmm.
And so method acting is my key concept for this movie. It's basically trying to replicate similar situations, bringing in your real life to create authentic situations in acting. So some examples were, I read Dustin Hoffman's character in some movie at one point was like insomnia or had insomnia or something. So he stayed up all night the night before a big scene or something. Hmm. And Montgomery Clift for this role, there's a part of this movie where he's in prison and he stayed in a prison cell for and spoke with a bunch of prisoners to kind of get a sense of what life would be like there for his character.
Huh.
So the other famous examples are, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis, Christian Bale, all these, you know, Heath Ledger, all these really big actors that really kind of get into their roles. And I think this movie, and it's, in particular, hit Montgomery Clift's performance in it, you can start to see a slightly more subtle, a slightly more realistic, authentic kind of acting than we have seen before.
Hmm. Yeah, he was really, really good. And his name is awesome.
Yeah, Montgomery Clift.
Yeah.
With a T at the end. Everyone called him Monty. He has some early success starring with John Wayne in a movie called Red River, and then he breaks out big with this movie, and then in another movie we're going to watch a little bit later called From Here to Eternity, which is, I've never seen, but it's that famous movie where they're making out on the beach and the waves crash over the people.
Oh, nice.
Shortly after that movie, though, he has a car accident that he never really fully recovers from.
Mm.
He gets addicted to painkillers, and his career stumbles, and in 1961, he stars in two movies. He stars in The Misfits, which is Marilyn Monroe's final film.
Mm.
And she was quoted as saying that he was in worse shape than she was. And she dies shortly thereafter that from drug overdose.
Oh, wow.
And he also starred in a movie called Judgment at Nuremberg, where he gets an Academy Award nomination, but he's only in one scene. And apparently, he struggled so badly to remember like any of his lines of making this movie. And it was kind of a nightmare for people working with him.
Oh, wow.
And so eventually he dies of heart failure, rumored to largely be brought on by his drug use in 1966 at the age of 45.
So
he burns out real quick.
We had like, we talked about it in the last episode where it was like the passing of the torch. Like the past two movies we've watched is like old Hollywood, classic golden age Hollywood, and then you know, we've got the new generation. Sounds like the new generation's got a couple of drug problems, a couple of issues here. Sounds right. Like they're not the most mentally stable.
No, not at all. But this is
sad
movie,
stories to come.
Yeah. This movie, I think, the one we did right before this was All About Eve, and I couldn't help but kind of compare the style of this movie with that one, and this one just felt a lot more authentic to me.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think this, yes, yeah, we'll talk about that some more, but much more artistic value in this movie. There's, I felt like, a lot more to learn from this movie than All About Eve. What was All About Eve ranked? It's more in the 20s, right?
Yeah, I think the originalist had it like 16 or something.
Okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and say that's not going to be where it ends up on my list, and this one's not going to fall off of my list, but, you know.
Right. All right, well, that's all I have to talk about before we talk about the movie. You want to have anything to add?
Nope, nothing. It's A Place in the Sun, 1951, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's get into it.
All right. We open up with the credits and a man is hitchhiking. He's got his back to us, to the camera, and he's walking backwards towards the camera. And as he gets closer, he turns around in a close-up on his face, and we meet Montgomery Clift's George Eastman. He is super good-looking.
Yeah, very 50s kind of style, like, I mean, like, kind of Grease, like early Grease, you know, that style with the hair and everything. That's, like, I guess 60s, but like the precursor to that, like he's a very good looking dude.
Yeah, he's got slick back hair. He's got like the tight white undershirt. you know, tight jeans kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But he is, what an effective introduction to, you know, a heartthrob type of character, you know, back to you slowly walking, and then he turns around with that look on his face, you know, it's kind of
the first of many close up, very close up shot here.
Mm-hmm. So he gets picked up and makes it to a factory with the name Eastman on it, and he goes to speak to
Go ahead. Back up. Yeah, so he does that, and he's like, while he's hitchhiking, there's this big billboard behind him with this car, and it says, like, must be an Eastman or something like that. At first, I thought it was, like, a car company is what Eastman was, but it has Elizabeth Taylor in the car as, like, a model, and I don't know what
there's a woman with a bathing suit on it.
That's what it is. She's in a car now, or on a car. I don't
remember, but they sell women's bathing suits.
Uh huh. Yeah, but she's the model.
Yeah.
And he looks at it, and then she's in the bathing suit on the billboard, and then she drives by in this really nice car.
I didn't catch that.
And he's just like kind of gawking at her, like hoping, dang it, she could have picked me up. And then this like POS car picks him up, and he's kind of like, okay, well. Can you take me to the Eastman place?
Yeah. And so it's a factory, and Charles Eastman is the president of the company, and that's who he's there to meet. We learn that that is his uncle. Mm-hmm. And so he goes to meet him, but he's not there. He's at home. So he goes over to his house, and he sits there while he's meeting with his uncle, his uncle's wife, and I guess his aunt, and I guess his cousin, Earl Eastman, I think is his name. And he's just sitting there, and he's really nervous and awkward as he's speaking quietly, and he's looking down occasionally. And it didn't feel over the top to me. It felt a lot more real already. Mm-hmm. And just not kind of, I was reading some like reviews and stuff of this movie, and they called it like melodramatic and stuff. I was like,
no.
But it seems so much more down to earth than anything else that I had seen, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, we just watched, Sunset Boulevard with what's her face Swanson way over the top. Oh, yeah. Like,
but that was like campy, you know.
Yeah. Still, that though, wasn't. He's like, not overacting in any way, shape, or form. It's not like that. Very subtle. Yeah.
Yeah. And very briefly, Elizabeth Taylor's character walks in. And her name is Angela Vickers, and she just like kind of comes up to pick someone up and then goes off, and kind of you see George's reaction to her, and he's just immediately struck by her beauty.
She doesn't say anything, doesn't notice him, recognize him, and just kind of keeps on going.
Then we go back to the factory, and Earl Eastman is walking George around and kind of talking about how he must appear.
Yeah, you know, so they give him a job.
That's right.
His uncle gives him a job, and like the whole time before the job, like before he gets to their house and everything, they're like, he's from where? Like, isn't that the one with like the dad died, like your brother died or whatever, and isn't his mom like kind of crazy and like in some like religious thing? Isn't he like a blue collar kind of guy? Like, does he really fit in? Can he really represent us and like fit in with these high class society people? And like, I don't know. And then he comes in and is all awkward, and they're like, I don't know. Thanks for coming. We're leaving. So see you later. They like go to dinner.
Right.
He's like, but Earl will show you around tomorrow. And then so Earl shows him around, and like, he like lays down some ground rules as he's walking around and gives him this job.
Mm-hmm. And the ground rules are like, you, as an Eastman, you have to appear a certain way. You have to present yourself a certain way, and you can't date coworkers and fellow employees, basically.
Yeah. He's like, see all these women? No, no, he's like, by the way, you can't date any coworkers or anything, and all of your coworkers are young women.
Oh, yeah, he says something like, 9 out of 10 employees here are women.
So good luck, buddy, and pats him on the back.
Throws him onto the factory floor, and his job is basically on an assembly line where other women are folding bathing suits and putting them in, like, wrapping paper in boxes, and then he just takes the boxes at the end and stacks them up on a cart.
Mm-hmm.
That's his job day in and day out. And one of the other people on the assembly line is a woman who we don't get her name, I don't think, for most of this movie.
Her name's Alice.
But her name is Alice, and he often calls her Al. Mm-hmm. She's played by an actress named Shelley Winters, who I believe won a couple of Academy Awards.
Yeah, she's a good actress. And they just like are making eyes at each other while they're working.
Right.
And then I think it just progresses a little bit, but pretty slowly though, like months pass mm-hmm. before anything.
Right. There's like a little montage of like the calendar flying by of just to say how many weeks and months he's worked in this job. Mm-hmm. There's also a quick scene where he's kind of writing a memo to his uncle on an idea that he has to increase productivity along the assembly line. Mm-hmm. And he's in his, what I think is his apartment or something. And he's on the left side of the frame. The right side is pretty dark and it's nighttime and you can see out the window. And there is a building with like a neon sign on top of it flashing Vickers.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I guess, Elizabeth Taylor's family's business or something. She's mm-hmm. some sort of high-class socialite. And on the table on his desk that he's writing this memo on, there's a book that said something like high school self-taught or something on it, just to kind of like illustrate the difference of the social classes that he's in. You know, mm-hmm. like he comes from this working class blue collar. He didn't even graduate high school. There's the implication that he kind of had to teach himself some of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, this woman that he met one time, she didn't even acknowledge him, that he's striving to be with, but he can't really get there, is forever flashing right outside his window above him, mm-hmm. you know? I just thought it was great detail and staging to show his dilemma and the dilemma throughout the movie that really kind of, to me... So this movie is based on a book that was a play called An American Tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was struck by, when I saw that scene, how it's also based on a real life story.
I'm going to argue later that it's based on something else too, but I'm going to save that for a surprise.
Okay. Well, like, I was just struck by the title of An American Tragedy. And I was like, what does this have to say about America?
We're, you know, divided by classes.
There's a definitely class structure, you know, maybe critique of capitalism going on here,
mm-hmm.
where in order for the seeming desire for the you know, that like the elite have, that the lower class just want to rise up and become a part of the upper class, but they never really fully belong mm-hmm. or something. And they're kidding themselves if they think that, and there's really no way for the lower class to rise up to the upper class, kind of a thing. Yeah. And that's going to perpetuate, that was how I was viewing this movie the whole time.
Unless you're related to somebody, yeah. But, yeah, so it's really...
I'm intrigued now.
Oh, what my relation was?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Or what I think it's about. Yeah, no, it's nothing like real world. It's more topical.
Oh. Okay.
But yeah, no, there's definitely a lot of commentary here. But before we move any further, the style of the movie and like the artistic qualities of this movie are just so much better than All About Eve already, because I felt like All About Eve was just so flat. And the camera they were just wide shots and you saw lots of people. There weren't very many close-ups, you know, but the camera movement has already been so dynamic. The camera angles have been dynamic. You said, that just the imagery and having that shot with, you know, Vickers, and then, you know, the intro shot. There's like some, you know, a lot of super, what is it called? Superposition, superimposition or whatever, where you superimpose the calendar flashing by, you know, right. March, you know, the dates going by. There's a lot of that going on. Some of it I was like, this is a little excessive, like, why are these images? It's hard for me to focus on what's going on here. Mm-hmm. But it's just so much more dynamic, and I just thought it was really effective and a lot more interesting for my eyes than All About Eve seemed so slow, because it was just like all the shots were the same, and it was just a social, you know, it was just the characters were driving, it was their gossip and their whatever. But this one, it seemed much more filled with emotion because of that. Like the cinematographer was a character. But
I totally agree.
On with the story here. So he's learning high school and writing this memo to his uncle about how to get this assembly line moving faster.
Right. Yeah. And then he takes a break or something. And he goes out to the movies and he bumps into Alice. So they sit next to each other. And by the end of the movie, the whole place is full. And like by the end of the movie, the place is empty except for like them and like two other couples that are like making out. And, they leave and he walks her home and he's got his arm around her and they're like flirting all the way home. And when she gets to the house, they make out outside his house, outside her house.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, it shows them at work and they're kind of doing some more flirty stuff at work. And they walk out of work together. And George sees Angela in her car drive by, and Alice sees how he's looking at her. And here we get I was like, this is more like the tension between being who he is, lower class and uneducated, and who he wants to be, the upper class social climber who hangs mm-hmm. out with rich people and drives in fancy cars and goes to parties and stuff. Mm-hmm. And Alice is already picking up on this and getting kind of self-conscious and defensive and protective.
Yep. Poor Alice.
It's already... I love the tension early on in the movie.
And he's just, like, pretty clueless and... Not, like, pretty mm-hmm. clueless. He's just like, huh, what? Oh, no, not me. Yeah. Well, I wasn't staring. I wasn't drooling at a pretty girl in a pretty car and money. And I wasn't doing
that. With his, like, crooked mouth side-talking stuff that he does.
Yeah.
George and Alice end up spending the night together at Alice's house and clearly having sex.
Yeah, they have like a drink or something and then they go back to Alice's place and it's like, it was weird at first because it's her place and he was inside and she wasn't. She was like outside the window and he like starts playing some music and then they're like this way, you know, the landlord won't get in trouble or won't get mad at us because, like, we're not both in here. And I'm like, dude, you idiot. You let her stay outside in the rain and you're, like, in her place. Like, what's going on? And then she's like, well, I guess I could come inside. And then they, like, kind of start dancing and then they're just in the shadow. And then they just kind of, like, move a little bit further left into the shadow. And then,
yeah.
She's like, what is his name? George?
Yeah.
She's like, oh, George. And then, like, yeah. It's morning.
Yeah, the camera moves to focus on a radio on the windowsill as it's playing music to cover up their sounds of their lovemaking. And yeah, you just hear, oh, George, a couple of times. And then the camera, it stays on that shot and then it's light outside and it's morning. And then you see it's outside the window. And then you just see George, you hear the door close, open and close. And George walks past the window. He stayed the night.
Yeah.
And I just put scandalous.
I know. Ooh.
This is the, well, I mean, we had stuff like this in Gone with the Wind, but this, I felt like it seemed like it'd been a while since we had had anything like this. This seemed kind of scandalous.
It did. Where's the Hays Code?
Right. Then we go back to the factory and Charles Eastman sees George on the factory floor and he's like, what is he doing here? Surely we have another job for him that's not here. And so he goes and offers him a job promotion and invites him to a party that's happening at their house. But the party is on his birthday and Alice had special plans to celebrate his birthday. And he's like, well, we're going to have to postpone. So mm-hmm. he has to miss plans with Alice because he chooses the high society thing over her and the lower class thing.
Ooh, let's back up. So before they have sex and before mm-hmm. this little interaction, while they're at this like restaurant thing or they're getting a drink or something, she's mm-hmm. like, it's crazy. Like, you're an Eastman and like, I'm just a low whatever. And he's like, no, baby, I'm just a low, you know, blue collar man too. Like, don't you understand? Like, they don't know me. Like, I'm not an Eastman. I'm like one of you. No, it's not. That's not how it is. And she's like, yeah, okay, guy. Like, I know that mm-hmm. they don't even recognize you. And he's like, I haven't talked to my uncle. I've only been over there once for a couple of minutes. Like, they don't care about me. They don't know me. And then they sleep together. And instantly the next day at work, he's like, I'm going to give my nephew a raise. Whatever happened to my nephew? Like, mm-hmm. let's bring him up here. He should be one of the Eastmans.
Right?
Oh, man.
And sure enough. And then there's a scene. Then he goes to the party.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a scene where he's kind of awkward at the party. And he goes into like this room where there's like a big pool table and a bar. And he's in there alone. And then Angela comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And they're flirting. And he's like playing pool. And she's like, I'll just watch you. And then she's like, do I make you nervous? And he's like, yeah, you do. And
he's like, I know all about you. I read about you in the magazines, like every single night. Like, but I really liked this scene here. And she's like, why are you in here by yourself? What are you, blue? And he's like, yeah. How'd you know?
Mm-hmm.
And whenever they do like a shot reverse shot where it's like his face and her face, and
right,
it's supposed to be their point of views, and like his image is really clear and hers is like kind of blurry intentionally, like he's nervous and like, oh my god, I can't believe this is happening, she's so beautiful and so famous, oh my god, you know. And I really liked that, and I was like, damn, like it looked really dreamy and kind of cloudy whenever Elizabeth Taylor was on the screen. And
And heck, maybe he was just really nervous about going to the party and just got himself a little trashed.
Yeah, that could be it too. Yeah, he had drunk goggles on and she was seeing clearly.
Because the rain was gone.
Yeah, no, because the rain was there. He was so sad. He's blue.
But also blue collar.
That's true.
But eventually they're flirting and then Charles Eastman comes in and interrupts them, totally like C blocks them.
Oh no, he totally does.
And he's like, George, you need to call, have you told your mother about the promotion? You need to call your mother. A man always takes care of his mother. And it was like, when's the last time you wrote your mother? And he's like, oh, I was planning to write her in a day or two. And he's like, go call her right now. So he goes over to the phone.
He's like, come on, uncle. Yeah. Like, don't you see who I'm with? Like, come on, man. Talk about my mom. Like, I'm a mama's boy. This is like, like a Playboy model here. Like, this is Victoria's Secret swimsuit. You know, something like that.
She's basically like a Kardashian or something.
Yeah. And he's like, really? You're going to bring up my crazy religious mom right now who's doing some weird, like, I don't know. They're really, I don't know what she does, but they're like really weird about her lifestyle. Yeah.
She works at some sort of mission where she basically, I guess, like feeds the homeless and takes care of like underserved populations or something. So
which is a noble thing, but like, why are they like, oh yeah, she's one of those,
but they're ashamed
ladies.
Of it. There is definitely a shame aspect to it.
Yeah, I thought she was like in some cult or something like that, but
well, because so he calls her collect, and he has to call the mission because she lives at this place. And I think she hints at, like, I think at one point she says, like, there's always a bed here for you. Like, he lived there too. Like, they didn't have a place of their own. They lived and kind of volunteered and worked at this place.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's a lot of shame with kind of their social standing, I guess. But when he calls, there's a sign on the back of the room that she's in that's like, it says, how long since you've written your mother? Which is exactly the conversation that they were having before. And so they're talking and Angela is like right next to her and like pops open a bottle of champagne and the mom's like, who is that? Is there a girl there? And he's like, I just met her mama. He always called her mama. It's really weird.
And she like kind of answers in the phone. She's like, who are you talking to? And like a, you know, high pitched voice and like being all making him even more nervous and making it way worse for him.
Yeah. And when he eventually he hangs up after he tells her about the promotion and everything. And then this was like one of the lines of like, this guy's a smooth talker. When he hangs up, Elizabeth Taylor's Angela character says, did she tell you not to waste your time on girls? And he says, I don't waste my time. And I was like, boom, this guy just dropped the line of the century on this girl.
That's how you do it.
I don't waste my time. It was so smooth. I was like, oh, when I watched it, I audibly gasped and like laughed and clapped. I was like, this guy's got game.
He's getting it.
Yeah, definitely. And then We go back and he's having dinner at Alice's house or something, or she's having dinner at his apartment. It's like they're all cramped at a table that's like right next to a bed or something.
She was sleeping and when he came in, and she had like this whole meal prepared for him. Mm-hmm. And she was like, I thought it was only going to be 45 minutes. And he's like, I'm sorry. Like, I had to make all these appearances and talk to all these people. My uncle kept introducing me. I'm sorry. Like, I tried to get out of there in 3 hours. And she was like, it's been four.
Yeah.
And he's like, the food was cold and they're sitting around the table and she's kind of just grilling him about who all was there, who he was meeting. And she's getting more and more jealous. The tension is building in this scene whenever he shows up late to his birthday dinner.
Yeah. And yeah, she's super jealous of, she's not sure who, but she's jealous of Angela, basically. And he can't tell them about Alice because of the company rule. That comes up in the conversation.
Yeah, and he does...
They can't tell anybody about their dating.
And he does figure, or she does ask, like, was Angela Vickers there? And he's like, well, yeah, but... She's like,
Yeah. And then later on, George is, I think, back at his place, and he's talking to Alice on the phone, and she's like, I'm not feeling well. And he's like, well, you should go check out the doctor or something. And then right after that, Angela calls him on the phone and invites him out. And they go to the Eastman's house for a party, and they're dancing.
This is nice. I don't want to spoil it.
You better tell me.
I love you. I've loved you since the first moment I saw you. I guess maybe I even loved you before I saw you.
You're the fellow that wondered why I invited you here tonight. I'll tell you why. I love... Are they watching us? I love you too. It scares me. But it is a wonderful feeling.
He's like, I have loved you since the first time I picked up a magazine. I mean, since the first time I saw you. He's like, you're so perfect and beautiful and everything that I could never, ever have as a blue-collar man. And, yeah, no. And she's like, I don't know exactly why she loves him, but she does.
Yeah. I mean, he's really handsome.
Yeah.
But... There were some, like, YouTube comments as I was looking at videos and clips from the movie afterwards, and they were, like, there was someone saying, in some scenes, there's people that are so beautiful you can't take your eyes off of them. He's like, it's hard to pick which person to look at.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking at Elizabeth Taylor. I'm not going to lie. She's gorgeous. But like, I mean, he didn't do anything. Like, there is a really short, you know, courtship and I guess just different time period. But she's like, oh, I love you too. Like, let's yada, yada, yada. I don't know.
All right. This next scene is the craziest scene in the movie, in my opinion.
What, she's sick and she goes to see the doctor?
Yeah, she goes to see the doctor, and the doctor reveals that she is pregnant. And he's like, so, blah, blah, blah. And they do this dance around where she's basically asking for and wanting an abortion.
Yep.
And he's not quite getting it. And is like, no, no, no. And then eventually she's like, I'm not married. And
yeah, it starts
I
off
can't
like
do this.
Starts off like my husband and I, we do, you know, I have to work and he has to work full time. We can barely meet any of the bills. .. And he's like, what's his career? And she's like, he's a electrician. He's like, that's a great career. He's got money. She's like, damn it. Okay, let me try something else. And he's like, well, I see, we don't necessarily want it.
Yeah. it's so, like, clear what they're talking about, but they never say it.
And he's like, you'll find a way to afford the baby. Like, things like this, like, once you just get over, you know, the fear, like, things like these will work themselves out. And then she's like, all right.
The guy was... Yeah, but the guy, he's like, at first, like, my wife and I were super nervous, but thinking we couldn't make it work with our first kid. I was like, you're a doctor, dude.
I know.
He's like, how tone deaf can you be?
And then he's like, you'll be all right. And then she's like, okay, we're not married. And he's like, ah.
He's like, oh.
You well, harlot. He's
like, yeah. And then he's like, what you're actually asking me, I'm not able to help you out.
Yeah, he's like, now I can judge you in the open. You're such a whore.
Yeah. He's terrible. And then he just kicks her out, and then she goes and she tells George.
He's like, you should go back to your parents. That's what he says.
Yeah, that's what he says. And then she comes up with a plan for them to get married during his upcoming vacation around Labor Day.
Yeah. I mean, but not only that, like, she's like, okay, I'm not married. You caught me. And also, I don't know if he's going to come back. Like, he left, and there's this really hot girl that he's hanging out with who's got a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, go back home. And then, poor Alice.
Yeah. And after this conversation where she wants to get married during his upcoming vacation, he's like, all right. So then he goes back home and he circles the date on the calendar. And then as the name Vickers is flashing outside of his window again,
mm-hmm.
and then he hears a radio report about a bunch of people drowning.
Oh, yeah.
Planting a seed.
Yeah, yikes.
And Angela arrives and invites him to spend his vacation with her family at their lake house.
Mm-hmm.
And then he calls Alice and is like, can we postpone the wedding a week? I want to enjoy my vacation so I can, and he's like, basically so he can go on this like last fling before he thinks his life is over.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, fine. But she doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah, he's like, there's more work to be done or something. Like, they need me a little bit longer out here. The Eastman stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Rich people things.
And then cut to him with Angela and her family and the Eastmans, and they're having a blast on the lake, driving around water skiing and you know, hanging out at this lake. And Angela tells him about there was a drowning there. Okay. Again with the drowning.
So they're with all these friends and everything, and you know, there's like they're in some speedboat and water skiing, and they take a photo there, and that ends up in the newspaper in a little bit that Alice reads, and she gets super jealous. But before that, the two of them, just Angela and George, they go to this, like, I don't know if they go and stay at the cabin, but they're like being all flirty and splashing in the water and chasing each other, and it's like just the two of them, and it's this lake that's like really pretty and pristine.
Loon
and
lake or something.
Yeah, and there's the loon in the background, like, woo! I'm like, what the hell is that? Like, oh, it's just a loon. But yeah, she's like, they're on the beach of the lake or something, and she's like, oh yeah, this is did you hear about that story about that that couple that went out in the canoe or a boat in the lake over there, and it capsized and they both died, and yada yada yada, not that long ago, and no one was out here to know.
Interesting.
And he's like, I've got an idea. But that's where I wanted to talk about what this movie, where they got it from, and if it reminded you of anything else that we have seen on this list before. Let's see, the name of this movie is A Place in the Sun.
Sunset Boulevard.
This movie is Sunrise.
Oh, Sunrise. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is.
Like, almost every single bit of the story, it's the movie Sunrise, that old German expressionism 1920s or 19 whatever movie that was silent film that was like it's the whole thing. It's like a man with a wife and a baby on the way, and then he's like in the field with some other woman sleeping with her, and she's like, you should kill your wife. And then he's like, and she's like, you should do it like this, by drowning her. And then he goes to the city and, you know, is with that girl again and comes back and almost kills his wife, but then doesn't. And then it's this
You're
movie.
Totally right.
It's this movie, like, entirely. I was like, American drama? No, this is the German silent film from like a couple decades ago. Like,
I had totally forgot. I love that movie, and I totally didn't even think about it while I was watching this.
They did it way, way better in this one, but it is that movie.
Well, it's also based on a true story of a guy that drowned his girlfriend and then gets sentenced to die.
Yeah, this one has a better ending, a more dramatic ending, I'd say. But yeah. It's Sunrise.
Yeah. That's hilarious. I totally didn't make the connection at all.
I'll say it took me a little bit. So if you watched it earlier today, I'll cut you some slack. But
thanks. So yeah, and she tells him about the drowning, and he's got the wheels are starting to turn, and he's like, "I did see this movie 25 years ago."
Yeah.
And then she says that she intends to marry him no matter what her family thinks about where he comes from and all that stuff. So she's all in. Mm-hmm. Angela is. Meanwhile, Alice gets the newspaper and sees George's picture having fun with Angela on the lake, like you had mentioned, and she's PO'd.
Mm-hmm.
And we go back to dinner, and George is getting along well with everyone, and Charles wants him to go play golf with all these uppity people in his business, and so he's about to jump into the upper class officially. And
yeah, they're like, before he gets a phone call, they're like, "Yeah, George, like you, you can really do this thing where, you know, you represent the Eastmans in front of other people and talk and just, you know, rub elbows and schmooze, like you good." And then ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, everybody is like totally impressed with him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the phone rings. Someone comes to give him the phone saying it's a woman, and he answers it and pretends like it's his mother. Mm-hmm. Who is ill. But it's not.
Yeah, it's not his ill mother. He's lying about that. It's
it is Alice.
Yeah. She's pissed.
She's pissed, and she's at the bus station. She's gotten a bus to go to where he is, and she's like, "If you don't come and pick me up and we have a chat right now, I'm going to go there and reveal the truth to everybody." Mm-hmm. And so then he's like, "My mom's sick. I got to go. I don't know how long I'll be gone." And then he goes off to go get Alice.
And Elizabeth Taylor and him meet out on the balcony, and she's like, I better see you again. Am I going to see you again?" And they have this like really tight embrace and this big strong kiss. And then
mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's the first time they did that, but they say something like, "I'm going to kiss you like it's the last time ever," or something. Or she's like, "I love how you always kiss me like it's the last time you'll ever see me."
Right.
And he's like, "Yeah, I wonder why." Like, why would I ever do that?
He goes to meet Alice at the bus station, and she threatens to tell the papers and then kill herself if they don't get married.
Yeah, damn.
Yeah, and so they like, "Fine, let's go to City Hall, let's get married." But luckily for George, it's closed for Labor Day.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, "I bought myself some time." And he's like, he breathes a sigh of relief, and he's like, "Why don't we go to this lake nearby, and we can stay there for a day, and then we can come back the next day to get married?" And she's like, "All right, we can do that."
Yeah, I was like, "We'll have a picnic, you know, it'll be romantic." Yeah. And she's like,
"It'll be like the honeymoon you've always wanted."
Yeah. Poor Alice. So she starts getting excited at this part. I was like, "Oh, this poor girl." Yep. I know where this is going.
Yeah. He drives out, and he pulls the choke back on the car, something to force the car to stall out.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, "We're out of gas. Yep, it's bone dry in there. And might as well just, look right over there. We can go rent a boat from this guy." And they go and rent a boat under a fake name.
Mm-hmm.
And they start rowing out. And he's like, "Anybody else out on the lake? I'm just wondering if there's anyone else around." And mm-hmm. he's like, "Nope, just y'all." And so they go off onto the lake, and it's starting to get dark, and
he's just aggressively rowing too. Like, she's just like back there all happy and everything, and they're like, it's just like a huge lake. And mm-hmm. I thought it got dark quick, but yeah, I guess he's just out there rowing to get away from everybody else, like really, really quick.
Yeah, and she's talking about her hopes and dreams for the future. She sees a star and she makes a wish on it.
Mm-hmm.
And she makes a joke that the old man will think that they've drowned since they've been out there so long and it's getting so dark.
Mm-hmm. He's like, "Why do you have such a strained face?" And she's like, "Why don't you stop rowing? Like, take a break." And he's like, that's totally why.
Yeah. And she's like, "I made a wish that you would love me again," is the wish that she says. And he's like, "Would you wish?" And he's just, and he's like, he begs her to stop, and she asks him what he wished for, and she said,
"You wish that you weren't here with me, didn't you? You wish that I was someplace else where you'd never have to see me again." Maybe wish that I was dead.
And he gets up. They're like, there's multiple benches on the little canoe, and he gets up and goes to like the far end of one of the canoe, and she's on the far end of the other. And whenever he does that and sits back down, she tries to apologize, and she stands up to walk closer to him, and the boat starts rocking, and
he's like, "Don't, no, no!" And he stands up too, and then.
Boom, it capsizes. And we forgot to mention a small detail early in the movie. They work for a bathing suit company, and he makes like a flirty comment of like, "You would look great in one of these bathing suits." And she says, "Nah, I don't know how to swim."
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So now the boat is capsized, and they're both in the water, and she doesn't know how to swim. And it cuts to the shore, and we see George swimming up onto the shore, and we never see Alice again.
Mm-hmm. And there goes she his did. Pregnant almost wife.
Yep, he did.
Mm-hmm.
George kind of is stumbling back through the woods. He gets spotted by a couple people and is just like acting real shady, and he's trying to act normal, but it's super awkward. And eventually we hear a radio report that Alice's body was found.
Well, he's trying to act shady. He's just getting back to the car, and he, like, stumbles through a camp. And, so the trail of this whole death, it's like they're in the train station or whatever where she's at, and there's, like, one other guy in there who's, like, a newspaper or something, and he hears her be like, if you don't commit to marrying me right now or something like that, I'm gonna kill myself or something. And then that guy is a witness, and then... the boat guy is boat a witness, guy. And then this kid in this camp who he like startles in the middle of the night all wet, like walking witness, and then I forget where he goes after that.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. It's like bam, bam, all these like pieces of evidence that are just like, yep, you did it.
Yeah, there's all piling up against him. And then doesn't he go straight back to the vicar's place?
I think so. And we hear eventually a radio report that Alice's body gets found, and the people report seeing a suspicious man later, and the man that she was with wasn't found.
Mm-hmm.
And so the police start looking around for George, and George and Angela are driving off with sirens surrounding and kind of all around them. And
his method acting is really good before they're driving around, because they're at the house, the lake house, and everyone wants him to do stuff. And like, "George, how's your mother?" And he's like, you know, caught in the line. He's like, "I'm just really tired." And she's like, "Yeah, you seem way different. Like, you seem like you just killed somebody. What's going on?" You know? Mm-hmm. And he's like, "Maybe I just need sleep." And then every chance he tries to get rest, they're like, somebody else there's like got the radio on, and you hear about the murder. And then like, "Police are looking for," like, and describe George, or like, it just keeps getting more and more tense. And he asks her father. He does. He asks her, Angela's father confronts him, and he's like, "Are you going to ask my daughter to marry you? Because if you are, I need to know who you are." And he was like, just about to get rest. And he was like, "Oh man, I really need to at least sleep this murder off real quick. This accidental murder off. Hold on, man.
I'm going to wash this murder off my... mud off my...
And then he gets bright a little bit. Like, there's some light in his eyes when he's talking about Angela, and, you know, asks him about his upbringing. He's like, "I was a bellhop. I was a janitor. I was this or that. Like, anything to make ends meet. You know, my dad died. My mom gives away all of her money and helping out people. And you know, the Eastmans found me, and here I am." He's like, "I'm really nothing. Like, I, you know." And he's like, "Damn it, you're a good guy. And, you know,
you can marry her.
If you love my daughter, I can marry her." He's like, "The one thing I am sure about is that I love her." And then she jumps in. He's like, "I was eavesdropping." And then he's like, "I just really need to be alone, and nobody's letting me rest or be alone." She's like, "Let's go for a drive." And "By the way, I drive this super expensive car. I'm very beautiful and recognizable, and I speed every time I'm here, and the cops know me." So He's like, oh, geez, I'm not going to get any rest here. And so, yeah, they're speeding around all these turns, and these policemen chase them for a little bit. And she's like, game on. And she, like, you know, tries to hide from one of the cops, and then they get a warning.
They pull over.
Yeah.
And he, like, lays his head on her shoulder, and she's comforting him, and he's like, you won't love me if you know who I really am.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, falls asleep on her shoulder and is like mumbling stuff in his sleep about like his guilt, basically.
Yeah.
And he's like, you were just having a terrible dream. And then they go back and he drops her off and
kisses her again.
And then the police are coming up and he like jumps over a fence and starts walking through the woods and bumps into a policeman. Who's like, you George Eastman? Yeah, you're under arrest or something. It's like really kind of a flat delivery.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets arrested and he's getting charged with Alice's murder. And he meets with his defense team. And he manages to tell the story and convinces basically his defense team that he thought about murdering her. And at one point he did want to, but he couldn't go through with it and he didn't actually murder her, that it was an accident. And they're like, you know what, I believe you.
Yeah,
I actually believe him.
And either the Vickers or the Eastmans are like, if he's actually guilty, then I'm not gonna spend any money on his defense, but if he's actually innocent, if my lawyers think he's actually innocent, then I'll spend tons and tons of money on this. Like, mm-hmm. like we'll make sure that he doesn't go to the death chair or the electric chair.
Yeah. Or before you end up in the electric chair. And that's what the district attorney is going to push for. He's pushing for the electric chair.
Mm-hmm. So this is where the movie and the story, I mean, it differs from Sunrise. And I think in a much more dramatic and interesting and entertaining way. In Sunrise...
It gets kind of fantastical at this point.
Yeah, it does. And
it kind of becomes a different movie.
It does, yeah. But to remind everybody, in Sunrise... They go out in the boat in the storm, and it's this like pregnant wife or something like that. I don't know if she's pregnant, but she's got like a kid or something. I don't know, a kid at home. But and the idea is that go out in the storm and it capsizes, and he throws the sticks for himself to survive, and she doesn't get the sticks to float on and survive. And then he winds up on shore, and then. You know, they go out and search for her, and he's part of the search party, and then just gives up really quick because he feels bad. He's like, we need to search for her. I feel bad. I didn't mean to do that. And then, you know, he like, oh, I give up. And they're like, hey, look, the sticks. Mm-hmm. And then they find her, and she's alive, and they live happily ever after. And he apologizes. But in this one, it was an accident again, and then she does die, and he has to go to court to defend himself, and... Oh my God, it's intense.
Yeah. We go to the trial, and witness after witness, the ones that we kind of, that you walked us through, kind of are all appearing in succession on the stand and just pin so much suspicion on him.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually it kind of culminates in George getting called onto the stand.
Yep.
And he admits to thoughts of killing her. Which everyone's like, oh, and then he's like, but I didn't actually kill her. People, calm down.
And he's like, I couldn't go through with it. Like, I'm not a terrible person. And he's genuine, and you can tell he's genuine. Mm-hmm.
And it's true. He didn't actually kill her.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, he's actually innocent. Yeah. He did want to, and he did plan to. But then when he actually got to that point, he didn't go through with it. And it was an accident that she died by accident.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, keep going.
No, and the DA comes up for his cross-examination, and he's really grilling him and puts him into a canoe and is like trying to, he's like, why didn't you go save her? You're a good swimmer and all this stuff.
It was the boat as far as from here to the bailiff.
I guess so, I don't know.
Do you mean to tell me you couldn't swim this little distance to this poor weak girl? And buoy her up till you could reach this boat just 15 feet away.
Don't,
I'll tell you one thing, you know you're lying. She was drowning and you just let her drown. She was sitting there defenseless in the back of the boat and you picked up this oar like this and you crashed it down on that poor girl's head like...
He like slams the oar and breaks it and it like wood goes flying all over this packed courtroom.
Yeah, he...
That was insane.
It was insane. Yeah, this DA is nuts, and I don't know if this would, like, hold at all, and I don't know, I'm no lawyer, but, like, he does a lot of insinuating, and he, like, leads... Well, they both lead the witness or whatever, but, like... Yeah, I don't know. The jury, I thought, like, surely would be like, man, this DA is nuts, like...
Yeah.
But, you know, nope.
Mm-hmm. And then we cut to Angela, and she's in a classroom. She's going back to school or something, and she snuck a newspaper into the classroom, and she flips it over and sees the headline that says that the verdict is expected momentarily.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go back to the courtroom. The jury reveals their verdict and that he is guilty of murder. He writes a brief letter to his mother that just says, I've been convicted or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in jail. And his mother comes and visits him in a cell with some dude. I don't know who this dude is.
Like a priest or something, right?
Maybe. And the dude kind of grills him. The priest maybe like is like, why you couldn't save her? And he's like, I just couldn't. And he's like, well, in that moment, who were you thinking of? Were you thinking of Alice or were you thinking of the other woman? And George stays silent. And
it's like, there's your guilt, buddy.
Yep. And the guy's like, I think in your heart it was murder because you weren't thinking of Alice in that moment.
I'm like, yeah, but it technically legally wasn't, sir. Like maybe and, like, you know, not the death penalty. It didn't warrant the death, but okay.
Right. Like this is manslaughter at the like
yeah, at worst. Yeah, it's like
yeah, at worst. But Angela visits him in his cell. She says,
I'll go on loving you for as long as I live.
Love me for the time I have left. Annie, okay.
And I think in a really kind of
before she gets there, hold on. No. Before she gets there, time passes before that visit, and his mother's like, you know, after that guy's like, you're guilty. And then he's like, damn, let me let that soak in. His mother's like, mm-hmm. It's okay, son. Like, I'm still with you. I love you. Like, you know, in my eyes or whatever, like, you didn't do anything wrong or something. Says some comforting things, like she has his back is kind of the feel. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, time goes by and he's still waiting the death penalty. And they're like, hey, you've got another visitor. And then it's Angela and she's at the... the entrance to the jail, and he's just mm-hmm. or the prison cell, and he's just like staying distant, and his face is really flat and not emotional, not responding or anything, and he's not like warming up to her, excited that she's there, and yeah, she keeps talking, and she's like, yeah, I'll still love you, I'll love you forever, like, you know, this is mm-hmm. this is crazy, and that was like what his big fear was, that she wasn't gonna love him anymore, that she was gonna hate him whenever she found out, and she didn't, and there's some hope in his eyes a little bit again, and they embrace, and they kiss mm-hmm. one last time, and mm-hmm. shows some funny shots of the policeman out in the hall, and they're just like, I'm not hearing anything. Yeah, like, the no-touching rule is just not a thing. Yeah, right. Like, yeah, there's no visiting rooms or anything. It's just like they go into his cell.
mm-hmm.
And, yeah, she says goodbye, and then she, like, has like a couple moments where she like wants to say something else and she's like
yeah, there's two and moments that I like in their dialogue. Yeah, she says, I'll love you for as long as I'll live, and he says, just love me for as long as I have left and then forget about me.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they say goodbye, she's like,
seems like we always spend the best part of our time just saying goodbye.
And she leaves, and then a group of men, the prison guards, and come to get George out of his cell, and we hear over the, I guess, a voiceover or something of a priest or something reading scripture.
Mm-hmm.
And George is brought out of his cell and escorted down the hall, and the prisoners are all kind of saying goodbye as he's passing their cells
mm-hmm.
and wishing them well, and, you know, hoping that he'll be going to a better world, and he's being escorted down the hall to be executed in the electric chair. And that is the end of A Place in the Sun.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I was talking about method acting in Montgomery Clift's performance. The director, George Stevens, wanted him to do something really big in that final scene as he's being taken to the execution, you know, to scream or to cry or to wail or weep or something. And Montgomery Clift was like, no, that's not real. What would be real is that I would be quiet and frozen, and you know, it does feel real. It is the subtlety of his performance that is so great in this thing.
Yeah, completely defeated. No, yeah, mm-hmm. He was broken at that point.
Broken, yeah, and accepting his fate and just depressed and yeah,
yeah,
all hope gone out.
Yep.
So. That was it. The reception of this movie, it makes its budget back and a little bit more, and it gets nominated for 9 Academy Awards. It gets nominated for Best Picture, Best Lead Actor for Montgomery Clift, Best Lead Actress for Shelley Winters, who plays Alice, and none of those won. It wins the other 6 that it gets nominated for. It wins Best Director for George Stevens, Best Screenplay, Best Cinematography, Best Costume Design, Best Editing, and Best Score. Franz Waxman does the score. He also did the score for Sunset Boulevard.
Hmm. Yeah, good music, definitely good editing. There's a lot of the good transitions. Cinematography, yeah, amazing. Definitely mm-hmm. deserved an award for that, especially over All About Eve.
Well, this is the year after All About Eve.
But still, like it for our list and comparisons, like that movie was really high up on the list, and it was just like flat and dull and not visually stimulating. And this mm-hmm. one, you know, dynamic and, you know, engaging and visually stimulating with the camera and with the 2 lead actors being just gorgeous.
Yeah. And what I don't understand is, in reading about the reception of this movie, it's always talking about how the standing and the kind of acclaim for this movie has dropped over time. That it was really well regarded in its time, and as time has gone on, it's kind of slipped and slipped and slipped, and people kind of regard it less and less. I don't get that. I think this is a very good movie and up there with one of my favorite surprises of the list so far.
Same. Yeah, I think this one definitely is better than... I mean, we're talking about how Sunset Boulevard, you know, may, you know, last longer than All About Eve mm-hmm. and may still play. And I agree with that. But this one in a similar sense, like it was so tense and it was almost like a horror film at parts, you know, like it was... It was very dramatic and exciting, and yeah, I like this movie a lot. I would recommend this movie to other people.
Yeah, I think the thing left is what makes it great, and I think you went first last time, so I'll go first this time.
Mm-hmm.
What makes it great for me is the performance of the 3 leads. Montgomery Clift, Elizabeth Taylor, and Shelley Winters are all fantastic, and the subject matter pushing the envelope. We have premarital sex, we have abortion, we have murder, we have like a good trifecta of really risque subject matters that they figured out how to dance around and still kind of cover with the production code.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the potential themes of class in America and maybe relating it to kind of like a critique of capitalism, and it's just really... I thought it was a lot more layered and had a lot more to say than I thought was going to be in this movie. And so this movie was, like I said, one of my favorite surprises so far on the list. It's not without its criticisms. I do think I like the first half of the movie a lot better than the second half.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like the lead up to the murder, and then after the murder, it kind of loses a little bit of steam for me.
Mm-hmm.
All right, once Alice dies, and she dies fairly early. The movie's about 2 hours long, and she dies maybe like an hour and 15 minutes in.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's still pretty significant amounts of stuff that happened between then and the trial that kind of lost me.
I liked that stuff because he was doing some great acting there, but I agree. The first half was way better than the second.
Yeah. So that's why I think it's great, though. What about you?
I like what you said about it being layered. You know, onions have layers, ogres have layers. Mm-hmm. the best movies, I think...
The Sun's got layers.
Yeah, it does. The best movies we've watched on this list, I feel like, have a lot of substance, have a lot of layers. And they're those films you can go back and revisit and get something different out of it each time, or notice something, you know, subtle that you didn't notice the first time. And I think that adds to its greatness and, you know, what makes a lot of art great in general. But yeah, the performances were great. Elizabeth Taylor was awesome. I really liked comparing it to Sunrise after. I've been thinking about that for a little bit, and I really liked that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a really cool comparison that I didn't even think about.
And it makes me appreciate Sunrise more, and just, like, you know, spans the decades. And I think our dad said that movie was like a play of ethics, the Sunrise was, or something like that. Mm-hmm, I forget the exact terminology.
A morality play.
Yeah. A morality play, yeah. And this one was a more modern
the same
morality play than, you know, in the 50s.
argue, like, the whole thing, because I think in the production code there's, like, rules about if anybody commits these kinds of things, they have to get punished, kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he had to die because he was either directly or indirectly responsible for premarital sex, someone talking about an abortion or thinking about getting an abortion, and then somebody dying, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the production code would have dictated that this guy needs to die, basically needs to be punished. And, but there's still a lot of, like, creative layers that are done.
I mean, that could add to the commentary too of the production code, this whole second half of the film being like, we know as the audience that he didn't actually kill her. Mm-hmm. And that it was genuinely an accident, and he's this, you know, blue collar man who's just trying, like, to make it, and he's, like, finally climbing, and he's got this dream girl, and then he's got this, you know, this other girl that he's been with, and she, you know, he mm-hmm. loved her, sure, and he was willing to stay with her, and he was willing to sacrifice and everything, and then a genuine accident happened, and then he had to die because he was immoral, and you know, he doesn't deserve a chance, and he deserves the electric chair just based off of, you know, circumstance. I don't know. I think it just adds to it, but I really like it. It, yeah, a nice morality play. That's something I probably will want to watch in a couple of years. Something I'll recommend to anybody who's into old films and old cinema.
Yeah.
But yeah, this one was great. This one definitely surprised me. One of the best surprises so far.
Yeah, I agree. Well, that's it for A Place in the Sun. Next time, we will be staying in the year 1951 and talking about the number 45 and number 47th ranked movie, A Streetcar Named Desire.
Ooh.
I have not seen it, but we do get our first Marlon Brando movie. We get the return of Vivian Leigh.
Oh, nice.
And we get our first Elia Kazan movie.
That name sounds familiar.
He's a I'm sure we'll talk about him in the next episode, but and of course the return of method acting. Marlon Brando is another big method actor.
Oh yeah, he's got a method to his madness.
All right. Also, don't forget to leave a review if you're listening, to subscribe wherever you're listening, and to share it with your friends and family if you're enjoying this podcast. But for this time, my name is Andy Fernandez.
And my name's Michael Fernandez. Thanks for joining us on What Makes It Great.